You are tuned to Bathrob Spears Broadside, soon to have its entrance tune, if my tape recorder acts properly. This is 2 hours of civil rights news and views with me. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear Robert Norris, so stay with me, and I promise you won't be disappointed. Today we have interviews with a number of people. Jerry Henry, accused of calling himself a nigger, and facing 6 months in jail for saying that word about himself for the kinds of discrimination that he is suffering, which he likens to that suffered by black people in the 50s. You'll hear that. You'll hear more. So stay with us. Yes, it's the theme song coming on. Bathrob Spears Broadside, the August 19th, 1999 edition. Don't give up. Bathrob Spears Broadsides. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in the Santa Cruz area, or possibly even outside the Santa Cruz area. We are a small but mighty station. Some say mighty small. I say both small and mighty. And if you don't like what we're saying, please start your own station. Santa Cruz could use a couple of extra free radio stations. If you want to call into this show, and this is a call-in show, and we will give priority to callers, even often in the midst of taped interviews, because we think the callers are important, just as important, if not more important, than folks who've had their say on tape and will have their say as the course of the show continues. Give a call to 427-3772. That's FRSC, 427-FR, Free Radio, Santa Cruz, SC, 427-3772, and you will go live on the air. Uncensored, I might add. This station does not cut out fucks, pisses, poo-poos, cacas, or anybody's name. We believe in free speech here, and we understand that you will exercise it responsibly. If you don't, you will simply bear the consequences. That's what all of us do. In any case, stay with us. I'm going to begin the show with a conversation, well, a series of conversations and interviews that I recorded out at the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center a couple of days ago with a man named Jerry Henry and some other of his associates out there. We're going to be actually covering a number of subjects. I'm going to be reading you the latest updates on the drug war from the newest High Times magazine. There's going to be hopefully an interview with Don Churco. Don is the father of Ben Churco. Ben is the man you may know who was jailed after pleading guilty to charges stemming from his holding a teenager handcuffed to a fence while he phoned law enforcement authorities because the teenager was engaging in vandalism on his property. And the dad is going to talk about that, what he regards as a miscarriage of justice that's gotten a lot of play in the local papers. And I think not just KSCO should be covering that subject, but I think we should have something to say about it, too, here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. So we're going to be doing that. First, however, let's consider the Jerry Henry case. Here's a little bit of a flyer that was put out by Richard Quigley. It actually got slipped somehow into the Metro Santa Cruz, which made them fume and steam. Metro Santa Cruz is a weekly newspaper, mostly conservative, masquerades as sort of a yuppie, fashionable paper. I think they came out against the new Borders store that is coming downtown. But in the main, they support the mainline politicians around here on the city council and don't have much to do with any kind of radical change. But that's standard, I would suppose. Anyway, this flyer is referred to, well, let's read it here. White Anglo-Saxon judge to hear case against white Anglo-Saxon male for referring to himself as nigger within earshot of a black African-American. Street minister on trial for protesting discriminatory restraining order. By Richard Quigley. And this is the writer, Richard. Is also a friend of Jerry Henry, the man we're talking about. As strange as it seems, that's the kind of trials the taxpayers are paying for these days in the Santa Cruz County Superior Court. Jerry Henry, a street minister from Aptos, California, has been in a battle with the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office and First Alarm Security Company for the right to exist at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in what Henry refers to as Craptos, California. That's Aptos to all you loyalists out there. It's a turf war with the local gang being the cops. This latest episode in Henry's life started about 4 years ago when Henry went into the Safeway grocery store in the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center and found himself confronted by a First Alarm security guard when he stopped briefly outside to roll and light a cigarette. Henry's refusal to move on then or now has led to some of the most unbelievable abuses of police power and authority ever leveled at a single individual. In the last 4 years since the first assault by First Alarm Security, Henry has been thrown out of the shopping center under threat of arrest 4 times, arrested 3 times, charged with 7 separate misdemeanors, all bogus, quote, trespassing charges eventually dropped, and is now awaiting arraignment for violation of a California Penal Code Section 415.3, disturbing the peace by using, quote, fighting words. A trial, by the way, that is scheduled to begin next Monday in Department 2, but Commissioner Salazar is on vacation, so you'll have to look at the court calendar. If you want to show up in court next Monday, you can look for Mr. Henry, H-E-N-R-Y, just like the ordinary Henry name would imply, Jerry Henry, and see which court he's in and check out his trial. Henry is the victim of a protective order obtained by the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company on the basis that his mere presence in the area in front of the coffee shop caused the manager, Dan Eberhardt, to have sleepless nights and heart palpitations. Nothing more. On November 20, 1997, Superior Court Judge Samuel Stevens found Eberhardt's mental frailties so severe he banished Henry from the front of the coffee shop area, at the time the social center of the Aptos community. Henry made no threats and posed no actual danger, as the statute requires, but Stevens issued the restraint anyway. After all, the attorney for the roasting company seeking the order was the wife of one of the other judges. That's, by the way, Charlotte Attic. For those of you who don't know, Attic, Judge Robert Attic is the judge that Charlotte is the wife of. We call him Artichoke Heart Attic back in the back seats for his ruling back in 1989, finding a woman who served food to the homeless guilty and sentencing her to 3 weeks in prison for specifically serving free food at the town clock. That was Sandy Loringer. Stevens couldn't very well say no to her, Charlotte Attuck, the lawyer, could he? Politics is politics, right? Henry knows well where the line is that he is not to cross. Stevens went to the shopping center and identified the boundaries of the restraining order personally, a line in the concrete located almost directly in front of Rancho Liquors next to the roasting company, but out of the line of sight from the roasting company marks the territory that Henry is not allowed to enter. Jerry sees the restriction of his movements in the shopping center as little different from the restrictions imposed on Rosa Parks in Birmingham, Alabama over 30 years ago. Henry recognizes the bigotry against his disability which brought about his banishment and declares his frustration with his lot in a myriad of different ways. Anyone walking by the location where Henry has maintained a virtually daily protest for the past year and a half will hear his occasional rants, the effects of frustrations of a disabled man being forced to sit at the back of the bus, as he puts it. Some folks who don't understand all that has happened ask why he just doesn't just move on, to which Henry replies, to where? I couldn't get to Mars if I wanted to. This nigga tired, he protests. Tired of sitting at the back of the bus. This nigga tired. First alarm security guard apparently overheard Henry in the middle of one of his nigga tired rants and went to the sheriff's substation and complained. Sergeant Joseph Hemingway, the substation commander and a longtime bully who regularly exceeds the bounds of his authority and human decency to abuse Henry, realized that allegations of some crimes are so heinous that even innocence is no defense. He filed a complaint with the district attorney accusing Henry of calling the black African-American, Hemingway's description of the security guard, a nigger. The DA elected to prosecute. Thus, Henry may well have the distinction of being the first man ever put on trial for referring to himself in a politically incorrect manner, the first man, white or black. Henry's arraignment, was written several months ago, was scheduled for May 7th, and if you want to see your tax dollars at work, you can show up at his trial, which is scheduled for sometime later. Actually, that's scheduled for Monday and should be 9 o'clock in the morning when the jury begins to seat itself, though a lot of us can't really believe this is going to go to trial. One thing sure, there will be an absolute shortage of witnesses against Henry. Everybody knows he doesn't confront police and hasn't a racist bone in his body. Did I mention Henry is a street minister? It's not really fair to judge a man on the basis of a single incident, or is it? And then Richard Quigley goes on to describe the strange case of Sergeant Pee-wee Hemingway, who suspended Jerry Henry's license on April 1st because he said that Henry was an unfit and unsafe driver and requested his suspension, and the DMV complied. However, later that month, a DMV hearing officer, in an unprecedentedly rapid hearing, gave Henry a chance to defend himself, and on Henry's license was reinstated on the same day with an apology from the hearing officer for what had happened to him. Hemingway showed up late at the hearing before the DMV, and shaky, he said it was because of medication he was taking for a sinus infection, and failed to convince the hearing officer that he was justified in seeking the suspension of Henry's license. During the period of the suspension, over 400 boxes of food was not picked up and delivered by Henry to local kitchens to feed the homeless. I should add that Jerry Henry was a worker with Feed the People, the group under Sean Alimi and others that served homeless people downtown in Santa Cruz and other parts of the county free food. Now, instead of picking up and delivering food to the homeless, Henry is preparing for trial. He's facing up to a year in jail and over $1,000 in fines. And that is a flyer about Jerry Henry by his friend Richard Quigley. Now let's actually go to the Aptos Shopping Center itself and hear some conversations with these folks, and you can make up your own mind what's going on. I remind you that you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norse, and all you need to do if you want to join this conversation is give us a call at 427-3772.
August 16th, 1999. We're out here at the Aptos Shopping Center, 15-2, talking to...
Well, Jerry Henry, the crept-us nigger.
And Mr. Henry, what's been happening out here in the last 4 days?
Well, the other day, Richard and a bunch of other people were sitting here. We were just having coffee, and this new first attack security guard walked straight up to me. I mean, just picked me out of the whole crowd and just looked at me and says, "You're going to be leaving." And, I mean, all hell broke loose. I mean...
You were sitting right here?
Right here.
And you were no doubt, beating up some young person, perhaps?
No, I was drinking that cup of coffee, though, I just got.
Drinking criminal coffee?
Yeah, Christian Crank.
Christian Crank?
Yeah.
And so, who was this security guard who came up to you and told you this?
Well, he's one of the first attacks near Elites. That was the first day we'd ever seen him here. I guess you guys have been putting up with him downtown. I think they brought him in from downtown. He just walked straight up to me and told me I was going to be leaving.
But you didn't catch his name, huh?
No.
Well, do you
we haven't got the police reports yet.
Do you have to get any more kind of boots up here like this?
No, he's kind of toothless. Older guy.
Hmm. But you have his name in the police reports.
Well, I'm sure it will be. I hope. I think so.
And what did he do?
He just walked straight up to me and told me I was going to leave. You know, I was going to be leaving.
And now, what did you say?
Well, I think everybody just about jumped in and explained to him that he needed to leave me alone, and he called the sheriff after that, and we had four squad cars out here.
And about what time of day was it?
Early afternoon, you know.
What day was it?
This was, I think it was Saturday, I'm not sure.
Right. So,
there's been so many so lately. They've been out here, I mean, I think I've done 14 deputies in 4 days this last week. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
But Saturday was kind of a culmination?
Too many. You know, they just need to knock this shit off and leave the nigger alone, quit trying to drive the nigger out to the woodshed and beat him up all the time.
So when these four squad cars arrived, then what happened?
I think he got told to leave me alone. I don't know. They came and talked to us for a while. They had some real interesting conversations. We got tapes of it, but
what was the gist of it? What did they want with you?
Oh, I think the deputy sat here and said we had the right to be here. He even informed us that first alarm guy wasn't hired to be nice to us. He didn't think.
And what was the deputy's name?
As you know, I'm horrible on names. I am a disabled man, no matter what.
No problem. No problem. Yeah. I have to ask, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's, I don't know, Ensweiler, I think.
And that reminds me of the guy that got fired down there at Wrongs and Sonatos down in Santa Cruz. Remember that Arabian guy? And he joined First Alarm, but he sympathized with the homeless. And he was fired because he was told that he had to harass the homeless and get them off the lot, and they fired him.
I remember that man. He's now in Santa Barbara, but I gotta say this, I don't remember his name either. So what happened on the days before?
Well, maybe you got him in your record somewhere, his name.
I probably do.
I have to rely on records. That's why the crap toss nigger never leaves home without his tape recorder. Mm-hmm. So we try to have some kind of record of
what goes on.
What goes on.
So it's not simply your word against someone else's, but there's actual documentary evidence. What happened on Thursday and Friday and, you know, the days before? What kind of contacts were there?
Oh, there's just all kinds of cops out here. I mean, they, you know, you'd think this was a crime zone. They were mother rapers, you know, father stabbers, all this kind of, you know, Arlo Guthrie kind of stuff. I don't know. Group W bench stuff was going on. I wasn't even littering, and they were all out here.
Did you keep a record of who was, how many cops each day?
Oh, pretty much. I think one day the one of the chief investigators with the DA's office was even here. Hartzner was here. You remember that big bad boy?
Lieutenant Hartzner.
No, yeah. No. Hartzner. Joe Hartzner.
Oh, Joe.
Yeah, he was out here, and they had a couple other deputies with them. They just
Joe Hartzner, you mean?
No. Oh, yeah, Joe Hartzner was here, but Joe Hartzner.
There's another
Sergeant Joe Hartzner.
Okay.
You know, the one that smashed my tape recorder once.
Well, perhaps he simply just doesn't like tape recorders.
Well, I don't know. That's just probably because he may not like the truth. I've always figured that a tape recording had to be the truth.
Well, sometimes the truth is embarrassing, you know that.
Well, I don't know. I carry a tape recorder. You carry a tape recorder? Why you got this one?
I just happened to have this with me.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I just happened to have mine with me.
Yeah.
So, are you tape recording Robert right now?
Why not?
No.
Well, the question I have for you, I guess you're...
I probably ought to. That's a good idea.
You went to the evidence.
you went to court last week, is that right?
Yeah, I got court tomorrow again, too. Yeah.
And that's going to be at what time?
8:30.
So that'll be at 8:30. Of course, this tape won't be playing until Thursday, probably at the earliest. But maybe we'll join you in court and see how it goes.
Okay. See you there.
Well, Jerry, you also mentioned that you went down to Gottschalk's, which is, I guess, one or two stores down, to get some signatures for your petition, which you're circulating, which is concern about harassment at this place here, this Aptos Rio del Mar Shopping Center, Rancho del Mar Shopping Center, essentially discrimination under violating the Under Civil Rights Act. And when you tried to sign up two people, an employee from Gottschalk's, a woman named, what's her name?
Well, in the comic strip, her name's the Fashion Cop of Kraptos.
But in reality,
she's the Grand Poopah of Potshock's, Claudia Beesterby, or Easterby, I think.
Easterby, yeah. Well, Miss Easterby came out and or she called the deputies on you, who then informed you that you might be...
They thought I was Richard Quigley. They wanted to know if I was Richard Quigley, and...
Another individual with a beard and a slim body type.
Well, I think it's somebody else. She's been the fashion monitor of Kraptos has been trying to chase around the village here quite a bit.
But they claimed they warned you that you might be considered to be blocking the doorway, to which you replied.
Oh, you'd have to be at least 800-900 pounds to block that doorway, one individual.
Well, speaking common sense to common nonsense, I guess. Thank you. Then they warned you, these police officers, you tell me that, the sheriff's deputies actually, that if anyone was annoyed with what you'd said that, or what you were doing, that they could have you arrested simply by provoking an annoyance, perhaps by doing nothing other than simply standing there?
Oh, they told me that if anybody found me annoying what I was doing and it upset them, and they warned me that they'd be taking me to jail if I didn't stop. And man, I mean, it was when the fashion monitor was out there telling the cops that I need to move along. This was like the day before the first attack came up to me, told the officers, he needs to be moving along. I said, I've been made a nigger by that lady long enough, and we don't need no fashion monitor. We need to get rid of the beast.
And there you have it. Were you a witness to any of this?
Yes, sir.
And your name is?
Chevrolet Pippen.
And what did you see?
He didn't see a thing.
I'm right here, front and center. I know what goes on here, sir.
What goes on here?
A whole lot of things. They're not supposed to. We harass people.
Who harasses people?
The sheriff's department, sir.
Have you yourself suffered that kind of harassment? Or?
Yes, sir.
When did that happen?
I can't remember the date, sir.
Okay, recently, the last couple of days? Or?
No, recently, prior.
Mm-hmm. Prior to the near present. So, would you say it's fair to say that in the last couple of days they've let you alone?
No, nobody's bothered me lately. But I have been aroused.
And what kind of harassment was that?
In the sheriff's department.
And what did they do? We can talk about that later if you'd like.
Later.
We have just come from inside the Rancho Liquors, where we attempted to buy some Cheez-Its. And we're told that they didn't stock them. That was for Jerry Henry, but apparently they don't stock them, but Jerry's told us a disturbing story that the owner or manager, a fellow named Al, in exchange of insults, has threatened to wean Jerry with a broomstick and continues to kind of make motions to that effect at different times. I should ask you, Jerry, have you felt physically threatened by this man or just offended?
Oh, I think it's a combination. Anytime somebody's in the alcohol business, you always wonder, it isn't like he's running a Bible bookstore in there, I asked the FBI if I could have told any merchant around here that I wanted to screw him in the ass with a broomstick, but, they told me no. Definitely, I would have went to jail. But I wonder why he can. I've wondered about the power situation around here a whole lot. There's been a whole lot of hired thugs out here. Billy Club's mace, and now we got the thugs with the guns and the badges. And yeah, I wonder about them.
We need Larry Lynn in the store. The guy had a really weird personality.
You know me?
Jeff?
And Jeff. Jeff?
Yeah.
You gave me a ride home once, right?
Yeah.
So, Jeff, what happened that day that Jerry was talking about?
I was actually there the day he got kicked out of the store when Al said that you're no longer welcome as a customer in my store because you went over the line the other day.
What, in fact, did he do that? What did he claim that Jerry did that was over the line?
Standing up for the kids. Like, from what I've heard from kids and what Jerry says, Al Pepper, the owner of that store, walked up to the kids and said, you need to get out in front of my store. And Jerry said, come on, this is a construction zone. Everything's, you know that it's always crazy in a construction zone. He said, fuck you. And then Jerry said, I don't think either of us would like it. And then Al Pepper said, I would, because I'd be using a broomstick. That's what I've heard from numerous accounts. And I was there the day when Jerry got kicked out when Al said that it just went too far yesterday. He went past the line. And then that same day or the next day, I'm not sure what it was, I walked in the store trying to buy a bag of Cheez-Its. And this fucker asked me when I went, put my Cheez-Its on the counter, the owner of the store, Al Pepper, he said to me, he said, are you going to be hanging out with Jerry?
You sound better.
It sounds fine.
He said, are you going to be hanging out with Jerry? And I said, yeah, he's my friend. And he said, well, then you're no longer welcome customer in my store.
Is that still the case?
That is. I haven't been in there since.
How long ago was that?
Nine months, 10 months.
And has anybody else you know been barred from the store for simply associating with Jerry?
More than five people. Yeah. I know that.
Are these mostly younger people? Or?
No, there's older people. People as old as Jerry. Mm-hmm. People my age, I don't know if there's anybody younger than me, but all sorts of ages. You don't care.
If you went in back in those days and asked for a pack of Cheez-Its like you did today, you'd probably been thrown out.
Actually, I think I did, but they told me that they weren't serving them. But, I can see that it looks like there is some sort of pattern of discrimination going on here in that respect.
You see everything Al sit there with his boomstick going like this, Jeff?
I have.
The motion you're making is sort of an in-and-out motion, one hand,
like you do the
rising and falling.
Like you do the African-American, where, New York or someplace? The cops attacked the African-American with a broomstick. A Haitian, I think he was. Yeah.
Reamed him in the station house, perforating his intestine.
Which he almost died from. The guy almost died from it.
Yeah. I remember, too. At least one police officer was found guilty. There's, looks like Lieutenant Hartness over there. But is that Lieutenant Hartman?
No, that's not Lieutenant Hartman.
No.
That's somebody. One of the good bailiffs from downtown.
Oh.
One of the good deputies, surprisingly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, keep recording there, Jerry. I see you're maintaining a record of what goes on, and hopefully, I know that we were concerned that you were serving food with Feed the People, and that was essentially taken out of your hands because of harassment. By the way, there's a new organization downtown called Agape, we're told, by a family working with a man named Sam Brecky, who is going to be feeding people from 8 to 9 in the morning at the San Lorenzo Lumberyard, and then on weekends from around noon at Loudon Nelson Center. So you might want to hook up with him. He's going to get in touch with you. I think he has my ready. And for anybody out there, get in touch with me at 423-HUFF if you want to help contact this Agape organization that's going to be doing feeding for people in Santa Cruz. Your name, sir, is?
My name is Bill Army.
Bill, you're drinking some Aptos Coffee Roasting Company coffee.
I am.
Wearing dark glasses, but you seem pretty mellow, pretty moderate. Have you seen any of the deputies or security guards acting in an inappropriate fashion?
Well, I have to say that there's definitely discrimination going on. It's been going on for some time, and like, it's just ridiculous. I've witnessed more than enough, and it's just absurd.
Give me an example of what you saw.
Well, it's like making Mr. Henry move along. I mean, that's what the case is, you know. Getting a you know, undesirables to move along and getting the kids out of here. It's just ridiculous because, I mean, these kids that come around here have nowhere else to go, you know. They have no place to, like, come. And this is a community. It should be a community, you know, and we should treat it like one and accept everyone for who they are and what they are, basically. I think it's disgusting. I think there's definitely some abuse of power going on in the Sheriff's Center. I think, I don't know, it's all going to come out in court, basically, you know. It's definitely going to come out, so.
How long have you been a habitué of this area?
I would say easily 2.5 years.
When did you start noticing something untoward happening?
Oh, two years ago or so, when they first took the benches away from here, out of the coffee shop. That was the first move to try to get people to not, you know, hang out outside and not be around. And then they wanted people off the sidewalks completely. You couldn't be near the sidewalk. They put up the no loitering. You know, they were having people, you couldn't sit on the rails after the benches were taken.
Now, this said that happened after several youth burned a shop or possibly raped a number of shoppers?
No.
Perhaps there was a couple of murder threats and large cocaine operation.
No, there was nothing illegal was going on. It was just people being people.
So this was simply a merchant designed to say, economically and ideologically cleanse the area?
Exactly. It's basic. Yeah, well, it's social cleansing, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And have you seen, does anything particular stick in your mind that you remember that seems to particularly typify what you don't like seeing going on here?
I don't like all of it, quite frankly. Like, I just don't like the whole idea that, you know, Jerry has to, he sits out here day after day and he can't live his life, he can't live a normal life, you know, because he has to fight this fucking court case. I think it's pretty ridiculous, I think it's real sad, actually.
Court case, I'd like to inform our listeners, is this is based upon a claim by the manager of Gottschalk's. Is that the one we're talking? Or?
Well, actually, right now Jerry is on trial for calling himself a nigger.
Right.
And that's the, and you know why that is.
Who's going to let this, can't this poor nigger rest here?
Well, you know, because they're violating his civil rights, you know, so he's basically, I mean, he is the modern day, if you will call him. He is the modern day nigger, you know. He is the Rosa Parks of today because, you know, he can't go into the shopping center. He's on the back of the bus, so to speak. I mean, he can't cross this ridiculous line. He can't go past there. I mean, it's just absurd, you know.
You're pointing to a line that sort of separates half of the Rancho liquor store as you look, I guess, westward toward Gottschalk's.
Yeah. Well, that's about all I have to say.
Well, thank you, and perhaps you'll be in court with him on Tuesday?
I'll probably be a witness eventually, definitely, yeah.
Thanks a lot. One last question. Have you ever considered filing a complaint with the police department or with, the Chamber of Commerce about how the businesses are seeming to be, because I assume this isn't just the businesses, we're talking about the sheriffs and some of the private the business owners?
Actually, I haven't considered it, but now that you mention it, I probably will. Definitely.
Thank you very much. It's about, almost 6 o'clock down here. And whoops, we're into our next interview. But before we do that, let's give you a radio sign-in. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call-in number for those of you who want to join the conversation or complain about the boring nature of the content of the show can give a call to 427-3772. Set your radio free. My radio is trying to stay in line. the magical voice of Carol Denny from Failure to Disperse, her album. And it is an album for all you Carol Denny buffs out there. So if you're interested in buying it, give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I will put you in touch with the proper mailing address to buy it directly from Carol. Well, the Anderson Valley Advertiser is a paper that's sometimes way off base and then sometimes hits home and sometimes just goes here and there. This is a weekly newspaper sold for a dollar. You can pick it up at the book loft. It comes out of Mendocino, California. Their headline is Fanning the Flames of Discontent, Newspapers Should Have No Friends. They quote Joseph Pulitzer in their byline. And the August 11th edition has an interesting story, Why Our Children Kill, The Stealth Militarization of American Society, by Tom Sanders, which has got some interesting stuff. I'm going to read some of it to you. Our children kill their fellow humans because the United States is a militarized society and has been since 1941. Our children kill because they've been getting some of the same military training in how to kill that we give the members of our military forces so that they will be ready when their time comes to serve. Our children kill because for 58 years, the U.S. has been involved in wars or, quote, police actions of one kind or another almost continuously. These wars are reported in detail in the media. Their veterans come home and tell about their experiences. Movies are made with very realistic special effects about the wars. Newspaper comic strips deal with them. Comic books show them vividly. High schools and colleges have ROTC programs with their military uniforms, rifles, and parades. Children-sized military uniforms and toy weapons are highly advertised and available in stores. And it is generally considered extremely patriotic to support the military forces in every way, no matter what they do. In short, the various elements of popular culture have systematically conditioned young people almost from birth to accept and participate in antisocial violence. And if being aware of all this isn't enough, let us examine government crime reports. There are two federal, sometimes conflicting crime reports produced each year. One is published by the FBI based on crimes reported by law enforcement agencies. The other is an annual report based on a national survey of crime victims that bases its findings according to the number of crimes per household. In 1994, the FBI report showed a 0.4% decrease in the per capita aggravated assault rate. This was the first decrease in a decade. But the same report also showed a 2.2% increase, a 2.2% increase in the per capita murder rate. The other government report reflected a steady increase in all violent crime, a rise of 5.6%. There is also much evidence that in many high-crime areas, assaults that would have been received great attention years ago, for example, drive-by shootings in which no one is hit and beatings in which no one is killed, are routinely ignored today. Between 1985 and 1991, the homicide rate for males 15 to 19 increased 154%. Despite the continued application of an ever-increasing quantity and quality of medical technology, homicide is the number two cause of death among males aged 15 to 19. Among black males, it is number one. That's Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman on Killing Little Brown and Company, Boston, New York, 1995. After the Korean War ended, the crime rate shot up at an unbelievable rate, both in the streets and in the suites, large corporate board meeting suites. In 1990, 2.3 million Americans were victims of, quote, violent crime, according to figures compiled by Bureau of Justice Statistics. These numbers came from surveys in which people were asked about their own experiences as victims. It did not include victims of the 23,000 homicides, whose mouths had been permanently and violently shut. The total number of crimes, including thefts, was something on the order of 34.8 million. In 1987, according to research done at the National Center for Health Statistics, 4,223 American men between the ages of 15 and 24 died of violent death. This was a rate of 21.9 per 100,000 in that age group. The rate for black men in the same age group was four times as much, 85.6 per 100,000. The homicide rate for the United States was more than seven times as great as Finland or Canada, more than 20 times as great as Germany, more than 40 times as great as Japan. Of course, these countries with low homicide rates do not have populations that own a lot of firearms. However, the National Rifle Association and others in the gun lobby do have a point when they claim that people kill, not guns. Both the people of Switzerland and Israel are armed to the teeth with all sorts of guns in every home and in other buildings as well, yet rates of violent crime in these countries are very low. These facts must give us pause and make us seek out the reasons our people are different, especially the young. It has never been normal for any species to kill one another in conflict. One of them nearly always runs away or postures to show surrender. When the fight option is utilized, it is almost never to the death. Even the case of piranhas and rattlesnakes, as Lieutenant Colonel Grossman, quoting Conrad Lorenz, pointed out, they both, quote, will bite anything and everything, but among themselves, piranhas fight with wraps of their tails and rattlesnakes wrestle until one of them flees or surrenders, knowing he will not be killed. Humans are no different when it comes to killing one another, even when an opposing army is shooting at them. F.A. Lord, author of the Civil War Collector's Encyclopedia, tells us that after the Battle of Gettysburg, 27,574 muskets were recovered from the battlefield. Of these, nearly 90%, 24,000, were loaded. 12,000 of these loaded muskets were found to be loaded more than once, and 6,000 of the multiply loaded weapons had from 3 to 10 rounds loaded in the barrel. One weapon had been loaded 23 times. More than 95% of the time was spent in loading the weapon and less than 5% of the time in firing it. If most soldiers were desperately attempting to kill as quickly and efficiently as they could, the 95% should have been shot with an empty weapon in their hand, and any loaded, cocked, and primed weapon available dropped on the battlefield would have been snatched up from wounded comrades or dead comrades and fired. The obvious conclusion is that most soldiers were not trying to kill the enemy. Lieutenant Colonel Grossman also reported on Richard Holmes' book, Acts of War, which told about the 1897 battle in South Africa at Rorke's Drift, where a small detachment of British soldiers was surrounded by a huge number of Zulus. Firing volley after volley into the massed enemy ranks at point-blank range, it seems as if no round could have possibly missed, and even a 50% hit rate would seem to be low. But Holmes estimated that in actuality, approximately 13 rounds were fired for each hit. Yet undoubtedly, these British troops were imperialistic racists who hated the Zulu. U.S. Army Brigadier General S.L.A. Marshall, a World War I combat veteran, made a study of U.S. soldiers in World War II combat and discovered, as he explained in his book Men Against Fire, published in 1978, that of every 100 men in actual combat, during an encounter, only 15 to 20 would ever fire their weapons. Marshall concluded that the average and healthy individual has such an inner and usually unrealized resistance towards killing a fellow man that he will not, of his own volition, take a life if it is possible to turn away from that responsibility. As a result of Brigadier General Marshall's report, new training methods were instituted, which resulted in a firing rate of 55% in Korea and a 90 to 95% firing rate in Vietnam. Part of the training was in the use of language. The soldiers did not kill, instead they wasted, knocked off, took out, and wrapped up. The enemy became a commie, dink, slant, gook, slope. The weapons became Puff the Magic Dragon, Fat Boy, Thin Man, etc. Certain special forces received the new type training first. P. Watson's book, War on the Mind, The Military Uses and Abuses of Psychology, reports on the techniques used by the U.S. government to train assassins. In the book, Dr. Narut, a U.S. military or Navy psychiatrist with the rank of commander, tells about the techniques he was developing in which conditioning and social learning methodology were being used to help military assassins to overcome their resistance to killing. The method used was to expose the subjects to symbolic modeling involving realistic films showing people being killed or seriously injured in violent ways. By being acclimatized through these films,